Welcome to the Midlife Male Podcast, a podcast designed to help men maximize middle age and live healthier, wealthier, stronger, and happier. I am Greg Scheinman, and I'm inviting you to join the thousands of men who listen each week, receive my Midlife Male newsletter, and are committed to making this next phase of life our best phase. If you have not yet downloaded my No BS Guide to Maximizing Midlife, where I break down the three principles to maximizing middle age and taking back some of that shit you've given up, head on over to midlifemail.com/No BS Guide. Guys are loving these three principles to maximizing middle age, and you can download your copy today at midlifemail.com/No BS Guide. All right, guys, welcome to the Midlife Male Podcast. Greg Scheinman here. I am your host this week and every week. I am super excited. This week, my friend, the amazing and incredibly happy and energetic and inspiring and motivating Sebastian Terry joins me on the show. Before I get into that, I want to talk to you about the Midlife Male book. Pre-sales are now available with the book being delivered to you on November 1st. So head on over to Amazon, search Midlife Male. The book will pop up. It is a no bullshit guide to living better, longer, happier, healthier, and wealthier, and having more fun in your 40s and 50s, which, guys, includes more sex, and what guy doesn't want that? So you can get your hands on the Midlife Male book on November 1st. You can pre-order it right now. Head over to Amazon and do that. I am super, super proud of this. And really, it's wild for me to flip over the book to the back and see testimonials from incredible men like Rich Kleiman, who is a partner at 35 Ventures with Kevin Durant, Bobby Maximus, who's been on the show, the incredible, amazing Josh Linkner, who is a five-time tech entrepreneur and New York Times bestselling author, my friend Seamus Mullen, the award-winning chef and author of Real Food Heals, Dr. Garth Davis, the bestselling author of Proteinaholic. All of these men have been amazing to me and supportive to have read the book and provided testimonials. And it's incredibly gratifying for where the Midlife Male movement continues to grow. And it's because of all of you. And I hope this book helps you. I really do. I put a lot of energy and love and time, obviously, and heart and soul and grit into writing this book. And it features a lot of stories in there, anecdotes, experiences, successes, failures from so many of the men who have been on the podcast as well. So you can open it up to any page at any time, and you can get something from each and every one of these men, along with my views on family and finance and fashion and food and fun, all of the six F's that I talk about all the time. So thank you so much for that. And if you're looking for more information on anything and everything and all things Midlife Male, go over to midlifemail.com. You can subscribe to the podcast. You can subscribe to the newsletter. You can download a free copy of my No BS Guide to Maximizing Midlife and be up on all events and experiences and things that I'm doing over there, as well as the coaching program. So if you want to set up that free call with me, see if I'm a good fit to work together, to be your coach and to help you maximize middle age, that can be done as well. All right, so let's talk about Sebastian Terry for a moment. At a time where burnout, declining mental wellness, and limited connection are leading to performance, engagement, and culture issues, organizations are realizing that the key to maintaining organizational health is through addressing the wellness of their most valuable asset, their employees. And this is exactly where Sebastian thrives. He speaks through the lens of his internationally acclaimed story, and he has transferred his experiences and learnings into three equally powerful, amazing keynotes. He blends dynamic storytelling with proven processes and database research, and he's engaging, motivating, and connecting to both employees and people and men like you and me. And he is the creator of Seb's 100 things. He has a list of 100 things. And he is out there and been out there living his list. And he has been doing this for years. So you can find the 100 things list actually through his Instagram. Forbes did an article on him in 2022, which was incredible. His speaking website, his book is available to you. ESPN did a feature on his 100 things. The man's just amazing. And I had the opportunity to meet Seb at my very first Impact 11 bootcamp. And this was back when they were called Three Ring Circus. And I was just dipping my toe into the water of thinking about speaking. And we sat next to each other both at the event and at dinner. And I was just mesmerized by his charisma, his positivity, and overall his happiness, which is a lot of what we talked about on the show. One thing I also want to point out that is happening with the podcast, and it's happening kind of organically and authentically, and I want to go with this. And it's when we first log on to record the podcast, and I see the guest face, in this case, Sebastian, and we're reconnecting and we're chatting and we're talking. We're not technically on the podcast yet. But really, that's where so much great stuff is. And I want to bring you guys into that, that behind the scenes, that camaraderie, that do we know each other, how well we know each other, what we're catching up on, what we want to talk about. So you're going to see, or you're going to hear these conversations where we just kind of, you just kind of jump in and you just kind of join us on our conversation and in our conversation, and the connection that we are establishing, reestablishing, and making. And then before you know it, it's been an hour. And I'm really enjoying that and just feeling the flow and seeing and hearing where it goes versus kind of a slick and overproduced in a way. Here we go. There's like this beginning and middle and end and ads and all that stuff. Let's just be real. Let's just be raw. Let's bring you in. Let's do it behind the scenes. Let's just hit the record button and see where it takes us and let you guys be along for all of it. So thank you for engaging me on that. Thank you for allowing me to have some creative latitude and freedom with that. I'm having fun with it. I think it's really cool. I think there's a lot of additional value there. And we're going to go with it for a while. Some of these guys, again, I know, like Seb, some of these guys that come on, I don't know them in advance. So we're just feeling each other out there. And that's the beauty and the fun of all of this and continuing to grow, share stories with you guys, help as many men as possible, maximize middle age, and keep doing good work. So wherever we're jumping in, for my amazing editor and producer, Michael, let's get to Sebastian Terry on the Midlife Male podcast.
I see Impact 11 is it's on right now, I think. Is
it? Yes, or, so they've got a boot camp in Detroit going on. I'm working with, I should have my speakers reel from those guys in the next couple of weeks.
That's so exciting. I saw some of your footage that you shared when you had done it. It looked pretty cool.
Thank you. You know, look, I'm excited about this. This has been a whole learning process. You know, from the time that we first met in Detroit, that was my very first boot camp. That was literally like my dip the toe in the water. And it was like sit next to guys like yourself and have dinner with you and your producing partner that was there. And then I don't have any idea of what to expect about anything and who's really in the room. And then the next thing you know, like you're on stage telling a story about, you know, delivering some woman's baby. And I'm like, holy fuck. Okay. These guys like really know what they're doing. Like these people can actually just get up and tell stories and like are incredible speakers. And I just found it fascinating.
I appreciate it. Well, mate, I remember you told me that you weren't necessarily there because you wanted to do keynoting per se, but it was more so something to add to what you were already doing. Is that still the case?
It is. You know, look, as I said, I'm learning, which is what is it that I really like to do? You know, what moves the needle in a way towards this mission of helping men maximize middle age, you know, and what does that really mean in terms of implementation?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Does that mean that I speak on stages? Possibly and likely. And at this point, I think I would really like to. What types of stages? You know, is a company bringing me in to speak to men about maximizing middle age? If it's a company or a brand that wants men, you know, or has a now, is it Apple, you know, or any of these other organizations that have men and women in the room? That's was one of the points that I was trying to consider. But there are men's events and all kinds of things that are going on all over the world that are geared specifically towards empowering men. And I bring a different lens on that, you know, or can focus on a certain niche, you know, that's in there. But it was also to make me a better coach and a better podcaster and a better writer. And all of those things. And with the book coming out, it was a great opportunity to explore and to learn. So a long-winded answer and a way of saying, yes, I'm very interested in doing it. Yes, I want to get better. I'm excited for the real. And I just want to practice and sharpen up. So if somebody says to me, hey, Greg, come out and speak or moderate this panel, you know, or do this workshop or breakout session, or even if I'm doing an interview with, you know, Men's Health Magazine, that I have material also that I actually know how to articulate.
Yeah, surely you'd be a prime suspect for the front cover of Men's Health.
Well, you're very kind. I'll send this to their editor and see what he says. But, but you know, that's the stuff, Seb, it's, you know, this as well as anybody. Like, we just try to, I think, kind of do what moves us and is interesting to us. And then we keep doing it. And hopefully people respond. And it's, you know, one person or one guy and one coaching client. And then it's, you know, one follower or 50 readers. And then it's 5,000 readers. And then it's five. And hopefully, you know, what we do lands with people, which is, again, why I wanted you here, because what you do has landed really, really hard with me in terms of the positivity and possibility and opportunity, you know, to do new things, which I think is so vital for men.
Yeah. Well, no, I thank you for having me. And I'm so keen to like talk about, I mean, whatever you want, really, but whether it's my story or just, you know, at large, what we're doing together and, the, you know, trying to amplify our messages and, So I enjoy all this stuff. So to
me, the coolest part is like this also, like, and I want to give people also a glimpse into even the conversation around the conversation. Like, hey guys, take a look at what we talk about, have a listen to what we talk about, even as we think about what we want to talk about. I think that again, there's this perception that like, again, we have it figured out or we know each other super well.
Yeah.
Or we're here with, you know, with some shtick or something that we want to sell or something that we want to put out there. But I think what's really cool, and I want to do my is, hey guys, let's just fucking air this, quite frankly, you know, in this kind of a conversation and say it's a couple of men talking about things that are interesting to them. The backstory for those listening, we met in Detroit. What was it, about a year ago?
Right? Yeah. Well, not even December. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the consummate pro at speaking with an incredible topic of basically, and I want you to like 100 things, right? A list of 100 things is what catapulted you to where you are right now. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was at the time Three Ring Circus, now Impact 11, as you know. My sort of, you know, how I got to that day where we met at least was that particular thing was a 2-day boot camp, and it helped speakers of all levels come together and learn about the different aspects of the speaking world / industry. And, you know, the truth is I'd been speaking for 11 years up until that point, but I've got to say that was a really pivotal point for me. I had always, as you say, I have this list of 100 things for those who don't know, and I'm sure no one knows. I lost a friend about 15 years ago, and it put me into a spot where I considered my own life as well as his. And I realized that I wasn't living well. I wasn't very happy. I didn't know what my values were. I didn't have any goals. I didn't know who I was. And I decided then and there that I wanted to prioritize happiness. So I wrote down a list of things that I thought might make me smile more. And that was it. Didn't care that for anyone to know other than me. And it made sense to me to drop everything in my life to pursue that list, you know, a bucket list for, you know, all intents and purposes. And so I dropped everything and just went, and I married a stranger. And then I delivered a baby, and then I lived on a deserted island and lived on the streets and helped a stranger and all these things. And very quickly, I saw that that message resonated with a big audience, media and the general public. And I thought, that's interesting. Wow. And 13 years on, you know, there's been, you know, I've written a book and I have a TV show, a reality show, and plenty of documentaries. And, you know, ESPN have a documentary on me for some odd unknown reason. But hey, it was so fun. And one of those things is speaking. And my narrative, I mean, and I love how you've sort of framed this conversation about, let's just talk about stuff maybe we wouldn't normally, the stuff behind the normal conversations. You know, my whole narrative had been, well, this is just fantastic. How great. Oh, I'm lucky. And that is sort of that is my general inner monologue. But when it came to, you know, the speaking thing, you know, I had friends around me who were speaking a lot more, you know, good friends of mine. And I thought, geez, what are they doing? So I asked them, I sort of put my tail between my legs. What are you guys doing? And yeah, they said, you should go to Three Ring Circus. And so I did. And it was really interesting. And as you say, you get to meet people who are far more established than me. And people who are absolutely beginning, and, you know, and everything in between. And I was fortunate to meet you, love what you do and talk about, which is, you know, I just think so important for, you know, everyone, men and women. But I love that you're focusing on, correct me if I'm wrong, but I love how you're focusing on men's health and thinking about every single aspect of life. Fashion being the one that really got me stumped, because I was like, I've never ever thought about my fashion. But yeah. So it was a very long answer, and I'm not even sure if I answered any question, but that's how we met.
It's awesome. And the beauty of it also is, you know, look, whether they're questions or not, it's open-ended in the dialogue. And I appreciate it. And what I'm enjoying about this is, the learning. You know, wherever we have been, and what I've met with all these people and the men that are generous enough like yourself to come on the podcast, and the individuals that we'll meet in rooms like Impact 11, and other speakers and people that we will hear and listen to and learn from even on the road in the supportive community that, like, hey, I just spoke for these people, you should speak for them next. You know, I've never seen that kind of dynamic. And then you also walk away with these takeaways. I was talking earlier today about, you know, just one of my principles about aggregate and curate and eliminate, you know, that we can't follow everybody. We can't consume everything and adopt it all into our lives. You know, it's exhausting. There's not enough time and bandwidth. You know? But when we aggregate these messages in from various people, and then we curate it down to what we really like and what lands with us, you know? And then we eliminate the rest, it allows us to operate in a really purposeful way. And that's where I kind of latched on to, again, what you were doing, this notion of, can I embrace curiosity? You know, can I be open to new things? Can I jump into the deep end of the pool, you know, and see if I can swim, or be around a group of experts in their field and be the newbie, but then also realize that there's a ton of other newbies in there. Everyone's an expert at something, and everyone's an absolute beginner at something too. And like, what's on your list? And I probably won't do 90 of them, you know, but you know, you start circling and you go through, there's 10 things on there, or maybe it's even one thing that somebody takes away from what you're doing and it changes their life. Seth, like, I think it really does.
Yeah. Well, I agree. I entirely agree. And it's funny. I, of course, talk about this a lot. But the idea of achieving anything of meaning is something that we all want in our life. We're all the same, you know, fundamentally, we all desire to feel good. And we'll get there in different ways. We all want to feel a sense of purpose or meaning in our life, in the workplace, out of the workplace. And I think if you do that, you end up in a place where you feel like you're growing as an individual. And if we all take it upon ourselves to go through that process and grow as individuals, we evolve as a community, as a collective, and we end up connecting with people as we have, you know. Look at this. This is a pure byproduct of us both following our individual desires. And we're here and we've connected and we're friends and doing a podcast, etc. So we're all the same. And if you think about, you know, if anyone listening, you think about the last thing that you did that you were really happy that you did, something that was meaningful to you, whether it was by yourself, whether it was with a family member, a child, a friend, a colleague, a client, whatever. And you think about how you felt in that moment, you would have felt an immense sense of satisfaction. You would have felt an incredible feeling of elation, of joy, of euphoria, if you will. you know, I'll talk about some of the things that I've done. And I remember, and it happens with all of them, but I remember crashing a red carpet one time at the Cannes Film Festival. I always wanted to crash a carpet, and I did it. And there's a very funny video on YouTube and all that. Anyway, when I talk about it, and I'm not exaggerating the point, when it's a long story, but basically I wasn't allowed on the carpet. I had to rent a suit and I snuck under the fence in front of tens of thousands of people, security guard, police, everything. And I just walked across the road with an invisible earpiece and I got through everyone and I got on the red carpet and it was phenomenal. I even ended up signing autographs, which is hilarious. But the moment I got on the red carpet, the moment my foot got on the corner of the red carpet and I realized I had done the thing that was important to me, it doesn't have to be important to anyone else, but it mattered to me. I was buzzing. I remember it vividly. I was buzzing. There was nowhere else on the planet I would rather be. I felt this insatiable, thirst for life. I felt blissful. And from a scientific point of view, and I've looked into this, when we strive for a meaningful goal, no matter what it is, as long as it's meaningful, that's the key, and you achieve it, you are filled with these two pleasure chemicals, serotonin, dopamine. Everyone sort of knows about them, of course, but they make you feel good. It's very addictive. They make you feel like you can run through walls. Serotonin reduces depression. It regulates anxiety. It makes us feel confident. It makes us smile. These two chemicals are released not just when we achieve a goal, but from the moment we write it down and all the way through the goal setting process. And that is ultimately what we want to do. We want to feel good. How do you do it? By setting and understanding what's important to you. And then, of course, taking action. And that feeling gets more intense as you go along the way. And of course, when you succeed, it's fantastic. But the key is you don't even need to succeed. Like you say, it's just creating a life, creating a framework, creating a structure for yourself that allows you to every single day put effort towards things that matter. And if you're able to do that, you're going to die happy.
It's so good. And it's so true. And it's not, again, the end game. Yes, we should certainly focus on outcome to an extent. It's great to have goals. It's great to have an outcome, but it may be cliche, but the process and or the journey and the enjoyment and the fulfillment that comes from setting that path and then actually going out and doing it. You know, to your point, you talk about the red carpet there. And we were talking earlier about, hey, do you know if you want to speak? I don't know if I want to speak, or when I first set out to do the same thing, I didn't know. But what I did know is that I was willing and committed to making an investment in myself. And that in its own right boosted, again, that energy level. It boosted that serotonin, whatever it may be. And then you go through the process and the fear and the uncertainty and the weirdness of, you know, of worthiness or capability, and you watch other people go before you and they ask for volunteers and everything. It's really, really interesting. And then ultimately, when I did get on stage in Detroit, I felt eerily relaxed and confident and like really, really boosted. My wife was asking me about, she's like, how did it go? And I was in anticipation, like the day before, thinking, oh, my heart is going to be pounding out of my chest. I've got to focus on slowing down. But when I finally got up there, it almost like the game was being played in slow motion. Like I saw the monitors, I had the material, like we were prepared, and it had this really confident vibe and feel to it. But what I also want to point out to even the people out there, you get paid to speak now as a professional, and you do it incredibly, incredibly well. And we'll get into that.
Thanks.
I paid for the privilege to stand on that stage.
Sure.
And I want to just point that out as it pertains to making an investment in yourself and trying to learn something different. Ultimate goal is to get paid to be on stage. Initial goal and the way to do the work and get the boost and figure out whether you can, want to, everything else, is to make the investment in yourself. And whether I do ever get paid or not, one of my 100 things, check the box, speak on a big stage.
Of course. Yeah, there's so much to what you just said, because I think from the outside, people see, you know, someone who speaks a lot and gets paid to speak, and they're like, oh, wow, my gosh, wow, that's what a great, you are just crushing it. I mean, you know, look, and of course it's enjoyable being able to do that. But to your point, there is so much work that goes on behind it. And I'm just realizing this, by the way, like from December when we met in Detroit, as I said, my narrative has always been, this is fun. This is fun. The phone would ring, bureaus would call me up and say, are you available on this date? And I'd say, sure. And then they'd come back and say, you're booked. And I'd say, great. And then I would go and talk. Having spoken for 11 years, I reckon I've got 3 photos of me on stage. I've never, ever been proactive in trying to get myself on stage. But it kind of, you could see that in the numbers of talks I was doing. I was doing fine, but I wasn't doing, these numbers that some of the great speakers that you and I have heard from and hear of a lot. So you have to grind. And maybe that's not the right word. I don't like grind because it implies friction. But anyway, you have to commit as you
well,
did.
I think it's the work that, again, it's what goes on behind the scenes. It's, are you doing the reps and the work when nobody's watching to actually become a pro? I think it's cool, again, to kind of fly by the seat of your pants or be spontaneous and be like, wow, something that I have developed and done and cultivated and just want to, is now kind of catching people's attention. Now the question becomes, okay, can I go pro with it? And what does that require? In there. And I think that's an interesting thing as it pertains to even, entrepreneurship and scaling and growing, or also to realize, and I want to ask you, it's like, what does success look like to you? I mean, like, hey, do I not want to speak 80 times and go pro and put together this kind of a reel and do this kind of song and dance with it? Everybody's measure of success is different. I've used this example a lot too. Our friend Josh, who runs Impact 11, told a story and shows a video of him doing 4 gigs in one day, that he wanted to see if he could do it. Mm-hmm. Our other buddy who was there is on stage, Peter Sheehan, who's a partner, talks about the opposite. I would never, and I hope I'm not butchering this too much if they're listening out there, and I'll ask him, but he would never do 4 gigs in a day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Both of them net incredible revenue at the end of the year, almost similar amounts. But again, it's what drives you and what your measure of success is. I hear 4 gigs in one day and I think, oh my God, I don't want to be in the speaking business if that's what it means. It makes me not. I hear Peter go, I go, ooh, I could do 1 gig a month. That sounds like a pace I could do. So there's a lot of ways to be successful. What does it look like for you?
Well, it's such a good question. I mean, for a long time, it's still kind of the truth. I just want to feel good. I don't care if it's 4 gigs a day or 4 gigs a year, as long as I feel good, I don't care. So success to me is, again, it's all just how I feel. It might sound a little bit trite or manufactured, but I just want to be happy. That is it. And that was the goal at the beginning of this. Now, now sort of, doubling down on this speaking thing. I think for me, success with speaking is I want to feel as though I'm reaching my potential and impacting people. The reason I went to Impact 11, or Three Ring Circus at the time, but let's say Impact 11, the reason I did that, the reason I was there when we met was I felt like I could be doing a lot more. I felt like I could be, I'm very lucky in the sense that when I speak, people do, I'm trying to say this without sounding completely obnoxious. When I speak, there is a very positive ripple effect for people in the room, as individuals, as teams, of course, as organizations. And I love that. And I've got emails from people saying everything from, hey, because of you, I finally reached out to my daughter, who I haven't spoken to in 10 years, to, hey, because of you, or because of your talk, I decided not to take my life. How could I not want to be in more positions where more people like that hear me? So that is success for me, getting to as many of those people as possible. Now, numbers wise, I don't know. I think I'm on track to speak maybe 40 times this year, which is, and I love that, but I really would like to be doing, I don't know. I sort of have a 3-year plan where I push somewhere closer to 100. Whether I get there or not, I'm not sure, but I'm going to do everything I can to make sure that I give myself the best opportunity. If I don't hit it, I always have to say this because it's a, as you say, we have these friends, the Josh and Peter you mentioned before, who were speaking a lot, and there's a lot of revenue there too. I'm very lucky to be on a position where anyone wants to pay me to hear my story. So I'm never annoyed that I don't have enough numbers on the board. If I have one talk and I get paid for it, great. If by the way, I do talks for free still. Again, going back to your previous thing of, oh, look at that person on the stage getting paid. I will still do a talk for free if I feel it's the right fit. whether the people really need it or whether there's some other way where I can get value out of it. I always consider that too. But yeah, I'm just trying my best. One thing I learned from you know, our meeting and Impact 11 was how relationship based everything is. And of course the speaking world, because that's what the thing was about, but just life. You know, I'm reminded constantly of just the absolute basics, the fundamentals that everyone has heard, but I'm reminded how important that is. Isn't life just about meeting people and having good relationships? Isn't that how you really develop, you know, genuine connection with people? And on top of that, you can then put on whatever it might be, work or play or love or whatever. So I don't know. For me, again, going back to Three Ring Circus, I discovered for myself that there are basics that we can't turn away from, including mental health, including all the stuff that you talk about. You know, and I've got a funny fashion thing. We'll get to it in a second, but yeah.
No, absolutely. And I think what you said that also lands is not only how important relationships are and continuing to have that impact us, yeah, and that understanding, but also with a lot of the men that I hear from, what it takes, you know, and how to develop those relationships, and more importantly, find them. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because as men, when I see and I hear a lot, is we get into these worlds. Now you're in a different, we're all in different worlds, but it might be our community. It might be our business or our company. Maybe the people that are sitting in the audience for one of, you know, for one of your talks. It could be the other dads of the kids on the team that our kids are playing on, or the fathers at the school and everything. And how do we do like the fit? You know, where I'm going with this is the fit is not always, as you said, it's not always genuine. It's not always authentic. It's sometimes we're conforming, you know, or we're being complacent and there's redundancy and guys feel kind of like I'm stuck in this sit. And what I find interesting about when you're talking about in relationships is it's twofold. You don't have to, be closest, if you will, or your relationships don't necessarily always have to be in where you are and even kind of the environment or community that you're in. Right now in this day and age, anything and everything you want is possible. You can go out and find it. Like some of my best friends, if you will, or most like-minded individuals, men and women that are out there right now are all over the world at this point. Yeah. And they are inspiring, you know, to me, and they are motivating to me, and they are grounding to me, and they are challenging to me, whether we speak through a screen like this and maybe see each other once a year or once every other year, or, you know, going to different events. If there's something that I want to participate in, whether it's Impact 11 or climbing a mountain or going, guess who's there? People that think like you.
Yeah.
So my point of this is like, also to people that are out there and they hear you speak and they walk away and wherever you are is like, whatever you're looking for exists. If you don't have the relationships per se that you want, you talked about mental health or depression or other things, and you're struggling with that, it really is out there for you. You know, having that courage and that conviction to put yourself out there.
Yep.
And say, this is what I like. This is who I am. This is what I'm interested in. Trust me, that group, that event, that experience, that thing, it actually exists. And you can join it, and they'll be fucking thrilled to have you, you know, also.
Completely. I mean, Jim Rohn famously said, you are the average of the five people you hang out with the most. And, you know, everyone says it. Everyone's read that. Everyone's seen that on an Instagram post somewhere. And I'm 41. And I'm just now going, oh, my God, that's right. You know, it's true. It's so important to surround yourself with the right people. And if you know, you talk, again, I keep mentioning Impact 11, like I'm sponsored by them, but, you know, like, if you,
by the end of this, you will be, we are sending this to them.
Yeah. No, but like, you know, you go to an event like that, like you say, it's an investment, quote unquote, it's an event, you pay money to go there or whatever. Like, forget about that. You are going into a room full of like-minded people. And because of that, you're able to thrive, be the best version of yourself, learn from others, give back to others. So, and the same can be said for, of course, not just speaking, but for anything. You want to be healthier and start running, go for a run, start chatting to someone who runs past you, and suddenly you're in a runner's group. You know, the same can be said for diet, the same can be said for any aspect of life, go and find it. And then the other, so the onshoot of that, of course, is once you commit and you are in and you are in your flow in whatever aspect of life, you know, this pertains to for you, you will suddenly start attracting people to you. Oh, you're the guy who speaks. Oh, you're the guy who runs on the beach. Oh, you're the one who started doing breath work on the beach every morning like a crazy person, but now there's 20 people next to you doing it. So there's something to be said for finding your group and also putting a flag in the ground and saying, hey, this is what I'm doing. If you like it, come join me too. And I like both of those things.
The Midlife Male podcast would not be possible without the support of some incredible brand partners. I only recommend brands I use, believe in, and trust, and each brand was handpicked by me for a specific reason. I believe in these guys not just because they're great companies with great people behind them, but because the stuff works. I use these to stay at my peak, and I suggest you do too. So go over to midlifemail.com and click on special offers for exclusive Midlife Male discounts and promotions. You know, I talk to my boys a lot about, again, leading by example. Being yourself and not being afraid to be yourself. Somebody has to start. Somebody has to lead. You may be the only person on that particular beach on that particular day or for that particular month until somebody joins in. You're not, again, the only one in the world that's doing it. And we see these experiences where people come together from all over the place and they're the outlier wherever they are. But now all of a sudden they're in a group and it's like, there is no outlier. You know, again, everybody is part of it. And I think that that's, again, a really, really kind of interesting and fascinating concept. And for people to adopt and say, again, nothing's wrong with me. And there's not anything wrong necessarily with the people maybe that I'm around. They just may not be the right particular tribe or people for me in this particular situation or in this particular time. And I always put the delta on that. I reserve the right to change my mind. I don't golf now, you know, like I hear from all these guys that golf and I'm approaching 50, you know, maybe I will golf when I'm 70, you know, but right now I'm not joining anybody. Nobody invites me because they know it's something I don't do. I do reserve the right to change my mind and grow.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, and that's another thing we can and should always be checking in with ourselves to see, well, am I still on track? Are my values still the same? Are my goals still relevant? You know, when I start, so maybe to cover both of these points, when I started 100 Things, I was this crazy guy in 2009. I left on my birthday, June 9, 2009. I was 28 years old to start this list. It made no sense to anybody, family included. People were upset I was going. I, of course, had a few friends who were like, that's kind of cool. But even my best mate at the time, Dave, said to me, sitting at a cafe just a few days before I was about to leave Sydney to head to the US to visit an inmate on death row, number 12 on my list. He was like, what are you doing? You're 28. You can't just be following a list of things that you want to do, like a bucket list. And at the time, it was a very odd concept. Now, I mean, everyone has a list. It's fantastic. You know, people started seeing themselves in my journey and were like, well, if you're doing it, why can't I? And it's true. If I can be happy by, you know, prioritizing things that are important to me, so can, and I would argue should, everybody else. So I think when you, going back to this idea of putting the flag in the ground and saying, hey, this is what I'm going to do. If anyone wants to come along, they can. You are giving other people permission. I think permission is such a powerful and important word to talk about. You know, we're generally not given permission to do stuff. Let me rephrase that. We're generally not given permission to think about ourselves. You know, we follow this blueprint, you know, the whole way through life, really. And of course, many people now stray away from this, but go to school, you get further education, university, college, whatever you want to call it. You get out, you get a number of jobs, you get a career, you start saving money so that you can accumulate wealth so you can buy a house, a family. You don't buy a family, but you know what I mean? And then you retire, etc. Now, there's nothing wrong with that, of course. But within that whole process, we're pretty much told the whole way, hey, this is what you should do. And when you've done that, you should do this next. And after that, do this. And that's what I was doing up to the age of, you know, 28, essentially. So I gave myself permission. I went, hang on. Let me just take a step back. Is this a good path for me? If I keep going in this direction in 10, 20 years, will I be happy? My answer was no. So I made a change. And so by doing my list, my 100 things, other people saw this. Other people started to understand why I did it. And they saw themselves in it. And they said, well, geez, there's my permission. If he can, so can I. So that's the importance of doing something that you feel is right for you, because the ripple effect is real for other people too. You allow other people to come along with you or even just start their own thing. But it's important because we see it. You know, when someone's passionate about what they do, you see that. And you wonder, how can I be passionate about something? What am I passionate about?
I love this so much because it hits the nail on the head of the work that I'm even doing with men right now and what so many men are struggling with, which is this definition or metric of what success looks like. And for most men, it has been salary and title. We have been raised and brought up to do exactly what you just described. This is the path we take so that we can be quote unquote successful. Okay. And that means ultimately we will have a good job that pays us a good amount of money and we'll have a nice title. And then, okay, we will use that to again have our family. You mentioned, ironically enough, buying a family in a way. I know we don't technically buy a family, but guess what? Okay. Yeah. We do. Sorry to say it, but we do. We get married. That comes with a cost, emotional, spiritual, financial, sexual, physical, whatever it may be. Then we have children. They come at a cost for all of the same things. We over-index in our career because that's what we think we're supposed to do because we need to earn more, give more, get farther to now pay for the increasing costs of the life that we have signed up for. Whether we wanted to sign up for it necessarily or not, or even by default, we didn't even know we had a choice to sign up totally for it. And again, nothing is wrong with it, say, if that's what you want. What it comes back to again then is, what does success really look like for you? And back to it. And for me, that was this eye-opening time of, what if we reframed it? And said, instead of salary and title, what if what became my six F's of family and fitness and finance and food and fashion and fun? And we're going to come back to your fashion statement a couple of times and what that really means to go again, what makes me happy? What does success really look like? And what are the trade-offs there in terms of costs as well?
Yeah.
I could make less money, but I'll have more time. If I had more time, I could be, let's say, fitter. If I had more time, I don't miss my children's games. Or can I do something that makes more money? And then not like, do we live to work or work to live? You know, all of these dynamics come into play. What are my hobbies? What are my passions? Maybe it's irresponsible to quit my job and quote unquote, follow my passion because of my overhead or my costs. But can I integrate other things into my life that make me feel fulfilled and purposeful? And use the proceeds of that job to fund them. You know, like there's all different dynamics. Or I'm going to quit my job and want to, but not now. Now I have to create a plan that allows me and puts me in a position to do it 1 year, 2 year, 3 years. You mentioned starting at 28. You also mentioned that you're 41 right now. It's a lot of white space and a lot of work, you know, in between.
Yeah. I mean, it's a really good point. I mean, I think that there's no one way that suits all, of course, like it's different. You have to understand what works for you, who you are. I am an example of someone who is quite aggressive and extreme in a sense. I dropped everything in my life to pursue a list with no money and somehow I'm here. I don't suggest everyone should do that, of course. You know, there's a very smart way to do it. An ex-girlfriend of mine, she was an accountant. She wasn't even an accountant. She was basically doing the books for an organization, did a great job of it, was committed to it. She worked extremely hard, 9 to 5. And she did it purely so she could, go and, essentially achieve her hobbies, which were, for sewing or whatever the things were for her. It was kind of a different approach to me, but she worked so that she could live. It's a good example. I can't believe I referenced a girl who cheated on me, but anyway, everyone does this in different ways. So it's good to know how. I've got a thing. So I'd love your take on this. It's very funny. I grew up on the northern beaches of Sydney. So I lived on the beach, never wore shoes. I didn't wear shoes for a large part of my life, actually. It's quite funny. But I'm very casual. The clothes I wear are typically things that, I get given for free. Not as an influencer, but if I'm at an event and they're like, here's a t-shirt, I wear that. So about 3 months ago, a friend of mine left a jacket here, like a cool jacket. And I saw it before I went out one night and I thought, I'll wear Scott's jacket. So I put his jacket on, I went out and I got so many compliments. which, you know, appealed to the ego, but then made me, you know, like I just, like, I felt like I was an inch taller that night. And I thought, why am I not dressing better? It's crazy. So I allocated myself a budget, and over the next 2 weeks, just went and bought so many clothes from different stores. I actually had a trip back to Australia. I bought clothes there. I almost had to get another suitcase to come back. And so now I feel that my fashion is slightly better, slightly. Now, whether that makes me stylish or not, I'm unconvinced, but I want to talk to you because you talk about fashion. I'm actually just really curious. What is it? How important is fashion in the makeup of someone? You know, how does that affect their lives?
It's such a great question. You know, one thing I say is that, look, my F's don't necessarily have to be your F's or anybody's F's.
Mm? Right.
You could add other things. What I actually really mean by fashion and really more geared towards style and confidence, to be honest with you. It just happened to be able to add the F in there and keep it as called fashion. But when I get asked about fashion a lot, it's really about what you just said. It's about walking a little bit taller, you know, feeling a little bit more confident, being aligned with, you know, who you are and what feels authentic to you, and how you want to be perceived and how you perceive yourself. That's really, to me, what fashion and style is all about. It's not about being on the cover of GQ. It's not about having to spend a lot of money, you know, per se, or even a lot of time on it. You know, now, if you like fashion, like art, you know, or like music or anything else, you can study it, spend a lot of time, spend a lot of money. You can do all of those things. It certainly can have a fulfilling place in your life. For me, what it really boils down to is, how do I feel my best? How do I feel my most confident? What do I feel puts out the image again? Do I want to project? Whether it's the glasses that I put on my face that come from Caddis because I love the founder, Tim Parr is an amazing guy. I think they're reframing literally, you know, what aging looks like for people that as we get older and can't see. You know, so, but you know, I love the story behind it, you know, as well. I'm very casual as well. I also believe that casual doesn't mean you have to look like a schlub. You know, I am a big believer in quality over quantity, investing again into more quality curated pieces that will get you a compliment every time you put them on, like your friend's jacket. You know, you can have 10 mediocre, pretty whatever jackets, or when frankly, you could have one $1,000 jacket, you know, in there. And you know, what is going to make you feel the best? I mean, you care to an extent. The t-shirt you're wearing right now, the watch that is on your wrist, it all says something.
Yeah.
So that's what I mean about fashion. And, you know, for men, I've got even guys that I want, listen, it's not that important to me, but you know what is important to me, Greg? Like my wife and my kids, like everybody looks great in the family photo. And like, she gets them dressed. She gets herself dressed. I'm not really just holding up my own. I just don't feel that good. No, what I'm wearing. Or I have to wear this kind of a thing professionally, or maybe it even is a uniform or whatever it might be. But when I'm on my own time and my own dime, what do I want to look like? Mm-hmm. Or how can I have to wear a suit to work or whatever it may be.
Yeah.
But I want to wear it a certain way. You know what I mean? Like there's another spin we can put on things, whether you call that your personal brand or whatever, but it's really your personality and your confidence coming through. I know that's long, you know, there, but I believe, I really genuinely feel that it makes a difference. When I go to the gym wearing a certain outfit, I actually think I have a better workout. You know, I feel more confident walking in. I feel more empowered. I'm ready to go take this on. If you put me in the wrong color or the wrong style or the wrong cut or the wrong whatever it is, I don't feel like me.
Yeah. No, I love that. I was so curious to see what you said. I love the idea of it all just kind of like a domino effect. The fashion fits into how you feel about yourself, which is suddenly almost like, you know, it's pride. It kind of even blurs into like mental health, really.
It absolutely does. It's a feeling that, you know, what was the phrase like, hey, get up, get dressed, go to work, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you know, I used to hear that for a lot too. Like, again, what does that mean? What's empowering in there too? I think it's all connected when you when you exercise and you care about your body and your health, mm-hmm. and then you care about your food or your nutrition, you care about what you put in your body, you know, and your success, you know, and you ultimately maybe care what you put on your body again in terms of what your clothes represent. Then you start actually generating more revenue or more income. As you said, even before, people start listening, they start responding a certain way. You start attracting the right kind of individuals. You also repel the right kind of individuals.
Yeah.
Or even a client of mine said, you know, we get the clients we deserve.
Yeah.
Well, it comes from all of these things.
Yeah.
Someone's not impressed by what you talk about, then you probably don't want them really around. And it's not the guy you're asking for dinner afterwards.
Well, I've just started wearing a jacket actually on stage, like a sports jacket or blazer. It's really funny. I suddenly, because I deliver my presentation in quite a seemingly casual off the cuff way. Of course, it's not that. It's very scripted. I know every word of what I'm saying and, you know, da da da. But putting a jacket on, I'm suddenly like, oh, okay. I'm going to deliver this in a slightly different way. And it's a lot of fun. Here's an interesting one, actually, talking about sort of authenticity. And, you know, when I went and did this, I spent money on clothes recently. I didn't go out there and buy, you know, Hugo Boss jackets and Armani shoes. That's not me. But this is, you probably noticed when I spoke in Detroit in December, I wasn't wearing any shoes.
Mm-hmm.
I never wear shoes. On stage when I'm speaking, and it's people always ask me about it, and I think there's something. I think ultimately it comes down to authenticity. I didn't wear shoes on my first talk I ever gave, and I felt great. I'm going to shut this window because someone's just started drilling outside. Hang on, sorry, mate.
No worries.
First talk I ever gave, I didn't wear shoes, and it felt great. I've never really worn shoes, so it was fitting. And now I'm speaking on stages to, you know, I'm speaking for Berkshire Hathaway in a couple of weeks. And, you know, it's quite high end, you know, banks and all the what have you. And I don't wear shoes still. And I occasionally drop into, is that the right move or not? Because I'm meant to be this guy on stage talking about things which are going to affect impact and all that sort of stuff. But I always come back to the fact of, well, no, I just feel great. That is me. I'm not up there nude. I'm not there in a pair of underwear. I'm not up there in ripped shirts. I look good until I get to my feet. But I think my feet look all right too.
Well, I think the key here is that it's you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we can talk about feedback. I did a piece on feedback the other day just on social media because everybody's got an opinion out there. We know that. Mm-hmm. Everyone's got an opinion. Maybe right, maybe wrong, coming from their experience, could be good intentioned, well-intentioned. We have plenty of haters out there. Whatever, I'll ignore those, okay? And I'll focus solely on the well-intentioned people that offer their opinions, you know, and judgments or whatever they are, and they offer them up. They may be valid, they may be wonderful, they may not be. The key is, when I was talking about this, it comes down to, I think, what feels right for you. Where do you feel best that you deliver your best performance, your best impact, which is what you want to make? And what's the perception and or takeaway that you want to leave, I think, the audience with? In my situation, it was about, and just one, there's been a million situations and they'll keep coming as we keep doing more of this, but it was about, you know, how do I open, you know, some of my videos? Do I come out and say, hey, Greg here, you know, and then people are like, we know who you are. Like, you know, stop, you know, it's stupid or whatever. And then other people are like, you know, it's kind of your unofficial thing. Like now I say it with you, you come on, I've seen you a million times. And it's like, hey, Greg here, like you're almost spoofing yourself and anything. And then you go with what feels best. I think about you standing on stage without your shoes on. And I've now seen this a number of times. I actually have seen some clips of you with the jacket on now, with the t-shirt under it versus the white t-shirt before and the 100 on. Yeah. You know, and you start seeing the evolution. What I actually really take away is like, I love the dichotomy. I love the difference between like, hey, I can be sharp and on point and professional and polished in my, and it can still feel spontaneous and rhythmic and everything also. But I'm also like, I'm that guy who like is also grounded, you know, I want my toes in the sand also. Yeah. And I want to be like, and I think all of it paints a picture of, again, your brand.
Yeah.
It would be weird, I think, if some guy who has never done a speech without shoes on, and has always been out there in a three-piece suit, suddenly started taking off his shoes because it works for you. Like that, I think, is where things get really like off kilter.
Yeah, I feel this turned into a therapy session for me, but this is great. Yeah, the MC will sometimes come back onto the stage with no shoes on. It's a easy laugh. It's a good one.
It, yeah, and again, it works because it's authentic and it's real and it's you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
I think we can, again, we can look around. I think it's always great to be observant and be curious and see what other people are doing and see how they're succeeding and see what works. Then we got to, again, curate it back down to what works best for us and then eliminate it. And be like, hey, you know, this is Seb's thing. Like, this is my thing. Whoever is listening out there, find your thing. It might be a tiny little bit from you, maybe a tiny little bit from me. Like, I don't have ownership. They didn't sell one James Peirce t-shirt. I know that. They want to sell thousands of them. I happen to love them. Go buy them. You're not stealing my look. You know what I mean?
Like, oh, my God. I made the mistake of going into a James Peirce store and buying some stuff. And, oh, my God, that is, they don't miss with the price.
They don't miss with the price. They don't miss with the quality. Again, back to, again, do what works, you know, for you.
There's
a lot of ways to wear a t-shirt. There's a lot of ways to find one. There's a lot of price points. There's a lot of stuff. Look, the Casio, the iWatch or whatever you call it, the raw, everything tells time.
Yeah.
There's a reason one costs $10,000, you know, and one costs $100.
Yeah. Yeah.
Matters to some people, doesn't matter to others. And again, I'm cool with all of it.
Yeah. Well, loosely linking this back to kind of lists, bucket lists, for one second, I think that, you know, people, when they start putting a list together, the mistake that's sometimes made is it's just a shotgun approach. You know, they just go bang, oh, I want to do all this stuff. And they don't actually really think about the core aspects of their life. And so as we, you know, as I would teach it in a workshop or something, if you imagine a bicycle wheel, and on that bicycle wheel, of course, there are spokes, and the spokes give that wheel strength and structure and allow the wheel to spin. The question I love to ask people is, well, what are your spokes? What are the, you know, really important aspects of your life? And it's sort of kind of leans on what we were just talking about, just being authentic and understanding who you are. Like, self-understanding is the foundation to creating a meaningful list. It's not about, oh, well, okay, hang on, I'll jump out of a plane, I'll climb a mountain and I will propose. It could well be those things, but the first step is rewind, press pause. What are the most important aspects of your life? We found that there are about 12. So there's key relationships, there's professional development, there's emotional wellness, there's giving back / impact, there's creativity, there's travel, there's romantic love, and so on and so forth. Those are the things we need to start thinking about. And if you understand what your spokes are, on average, people have 7 or 8, you can then start building on top of that a list of meaningful goals that would go on to strengthen each of those spokes. So I just, I felt like I should at least say something that might be valuable to your listeners rather than them listening to me talk about my feet.
One, everything you say is valuable. And I do, I think it's so on point, because knowing what's important is truly what's most important. And until you figure it out, how do you know where it is you want to go or what you want to try or what you even want to put on your list?
Yep.
Because it's not as simple as taking again somebody else's list and just doing those things. It won't have the same, again, meaning and impact, because your spokes are different from my spokes.
Absolutely. And they don't goals don't have to be world-changing. Meaningful change, meaningful development, meaningful achievement doesn't require radical change, radical you know, achievement. It could be very simple. In fact, we see on many people's lists who build their lists with us, there are things like have a better conversation internally with myself, be kinder to myself, go on a date night, write a gratitude journal. You know, it could be anything. So not only do goals only have to be meaningful, they don't have to be 100 either. You can just have one, but they can be very small and simple. In fact, you know, as you and I both know, there are things that we want to do which are incredibly simple, but they make an incredible difference to us. So yeah, when we think bucket list, don't think extreme, just think meaningful.
I'm glad you pointed that out, because again, often we feel like we need to do more, or it needs to be bigger or bolder or better. And that's what progress again looks like. That's what success looks like. If I'm making a list, or I'm showing it to somebody, or I'm taking action, it should look like something, right? It should look like impressive in a way or big. But do you know what? I'm glad you said it, because that it doesn't have to be. More often than not, and it gets backing off, as you said, Same thing. Stop. Take that breath. Come up with something also. If it is as simple as doing less, you know, or, hey, I would just like an hour to myself each day to reflect or something. I was talking with a client this morning about the same thing. When I make time for that, that hour has such a huge impact. Now, photographically or whatever it might be, it could look like a waste of time to others. But if you need it, take it, because you know what happens in that hour or even a minute, you know, take it. What happens there is you, again, you start to think about what's important. What is it that you really want to do? Even today or this week, what actions on my lengthy to-do list or my 100 lists or 20 things that are on my bucket, which ones do I really want to do today?
Absolutely. And the answer is you can always do something that's meaningful right now. You know, you think whether it's a marathon, whether it's going on a surf trip to Indonesia, whether it is cooking every recipe from a cookbook, whether it is calling one of your friends once a week to say, hey, I love you, whatever it might be, you can always do something today. And that is incredibly empowering. Some people find it confronting because then they say, oh, this is all on me. But it is. Life is all about choice. We are radically accountable for what we do. And a day spent avoiding that truth is a day completely wasted. It's not to say that every day we need to be out there winning races and getting, you know, huge accolades and achievements, but we should be using every single day to further stuff that's meaningful to us. And you can start right now with, usually it's as simple as picking up the phone, Googling something, sending an email. And even if you do one tiny thing in a long journey to achieving something, that serotonin, that dopamine, those pleasure chemicals will flood into the, I've got, here are my to-dos for today. This is all work stuff, right? This is, I've got to do a visa compilation. I've got to finish a TV pitch. I've got to tweak a presentation for speaking on Friday somewhere. And like these things, I could do that right away. And every time I put a line through that, I feel good. I feel so good. Now that's incredibly boring to other people, but it's meaningful and important to me. So for anyone listening who wants to feel better today, give yourself 3 minutes, 3 minutes to think about one thing that you would like to do in any aspect of your life. Write it down. Harvard research shows by writing down a goal, you are 42% more likely to achieve it. Write that goal down and then come up with three action points that will further that goal, that will bring you closer to achieving it, and do one. Do one. Life is about action. A list is great. A goal is fantastic. Makes us feel good for sure. Without any action, it remains a dream, an aspiration, an idea. With action, we get closer towards achieving it. And we all have the ability to take action on goals today. In fact, I'll go as far as saying our future and your future, I'm speaking to anyone who's listening, your future will be heavily decided upon and heavily influenced by the goals you identify today and the goals you take action on today. And knowing that might sound confronting, but I'd rather suggest that it should be empowering.
So, so good. That's what I'm going to do. It had me thinking about my list. You know, you hold your notebook up and I actually keep mine on Evernote. I have notebooks everywhere and it's chicken with lists and everything, but I love my Evernote list on my phone that as I do things, it has this great little function where you can check the box, like literally like check the box.
Yeah.
And when you look at the long list, and you don't always have to pick from the top either. Like you can pick, like I love this open space in the schedules that I, and then you kind of pick, okay, I have this capacity, I believe, for about three things in a day before I start to lose it, you know? Beyond that, I don't really do a whole lot very, very well. But you're absolutely right. When you click check on any little action, it's stacking those little wins each day that are so, so impactful to making progress on the big picture. I got like a two-part question, if I even remember both parts of it as you were going, because I was just stopping and going, wow, what he's saying is so good. One, I want to know what you're most excited about now that's either still on the list or has been added to the list that you're super excited about. And then I also want to know what you do in your downtime because with so many exciting and amazing bucket list things on your list and you rattle off, I'm going to speak to Berkshire Hathaway and I've got all these things that I've done. Are you able to, are you able to dial it back? I want to know what you do when you're kind of off, you know, also like the highs and like, hey, I'm by myself and I can turn it off.
Oh yeah. Great. Well, I find it very easy to dial it down. I'm a pretty simple person. So I live on the beach here in Venice, LA. So I'm surfing all the time. That's good for me. I've got a guitar next to me. I mean, I sound like a hippie, but no, I enjoy spending time with friends. What I'm also learning with age is an obvious thing, which you can learn at 15 if you want, but I'm learning that you don't have to know everyone, be everywhere, do everything. You can just be with the important people in your life doing stuff, which is like nice and important to you. So I actually have people find it quite surprising. If you were to look at my list and read the things I've done, you would think I was some extroverted, you know, whatever. Like I'm not, I'm pretty quiet. I like, you know, not keeping to myself, but I just like an easy schedule. So yeah, in between doing all these things on my list, I like chilling. For sure. That's important to me. Outside of that, to answer your first question, what's exciting for me on my list? Well, I just got back from France. I mean, I say just probably 2 months ago now, but I'm learning French and it's a long process. It's one that I'm not on every single day because, you know, there are other things I'm doing too. But I went over there and for 2 weeks, simply by myself, I just had this vision of sitting in the corner of a French cafe with a French newspaper, just, you know, trying to order things from the waiter. And I did it. For 2 weeks, it was the most, you know, there wasn't much activity. I just chilled. But even just thinking in French makes me so excited. So that is not the most exciting answer for you, but that for me really turns me on. Learning French and planning another trip to France quite soon. So yeah.
That's awesome. I love it. So where do people find you, follow you, get your book, find ways to write their own list? Well, I mean, this is awesome. We got to share this far and wide so people can get on the movement.
Thank you, mate. My website is my name, sebastianterry.com, but Instagram, seb100things, 100things. I don't know. I feel like that's it. I'd happily give my phone number if that helps, but yeah. If anyone is interested in actually starting their list, you know, we have a course. I'm happy to, I feel like I'm now trying to sell something. I really didn't mean it like that, but I would love to help. So please get in touch if you would genuinely like help with, you know, going through an 8-step process, which we've developed to help people identify and then execute on their list. But that's it. That's where people can find me.
And they will. They absolutely will. All right, guys, Sebastian Terry, Midlife Mail Podcast. This has been amazing. I greatly appreciate your time, buddy, because I know how valuable it is. And I know how many things are really on your list that you have yet to accomplish and that you want to continue to check off, including learning French. So next time we'll do some of this when we have you back. We'll do it in French. I failed French in eighth grade. So I can make Madame Rinez, who was my eighth grade French teacher who failed me. Maybe I can come up with a sentence or two for that.
I look forward to it. French next time. I'll hold you to it.
You are the best. Guys, give Sebastian Terry a follow. Go look him up. Go get his book. If he's coming and he's speaking on a stage and your company is fortunate enough to have booked him, get in the room, sit up close. Okay. He will be well put together on the top. He will be barefoot. All of this. It's so awesome seeing you and having you on. And thank you for just being happy, because it is so simple and it is so important. And I'm grateful. Thank you.
Thanks, Greg. You're a legend. Cheers, mate.
All right, guys. If you like what you hear on the podcast, please give us the 5-star rating. Leave us a positive review. You can hit me up at greg@midlifemail.com. If you've got questions, want anything at all, find me on Instagram as well, @GregScheinman. Until next week, I am out of here. Take care. If you're interested in coaching and taking this conversation deeper so that you can achieve your personal and professional goals, be sure to head over to midlifemail.com and check out the Work With Me page to explore options.